Why would you not be an empathetic and kind leader, particularly in the military domains where operations and missions require the full commitment of your team to ensure everyone's safety? And if you've not created meaningful connections with your troops or your team, you could put yourself and your other in danger in times of crisis.
Welcome to the Her Career Podcast, where people who are committed to a diverse and fair working world have their say, live from our expo and from our community. Virginie Viscardi grew up in Brussels next to the NATO building. Her father worked for the Belgian delegation as a gendarme, performing both military and police tasks. At the age of 23, Virginie joined NATO herself. Today, she is based in the US as the Head of Strategic Engagements and Communications at the NATO Communications and Information Agency. I'm Julia, Editor-in-Chief of Her Career. In our podcast, Virginie told me how her work for NATO has changed over two decades, why it is possible to lead kindly in a military organization, and we talked about the question if a pacifist can apply at NATO. So, Virginie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, while NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, rings a bell for almost everyone being the political and military association of its member states, your agency, the NATO Communications and Information Agency, probably doesn't. What is your agency's task?
Well, thank you for that question. So the NATO Communication and Information Agency, or NCIA, that's our acronym. It's what we call NATO's technology and cyber hub. What we do is we're a team of over 3,000 people spread across 30 locations across the North Atlantic. And we all work together to connect all corners of NATO so it can maintain its technological edge. So we work very closely also with industry because they help us bring innovative technical solution that we need in order to bring the right capabilities and project and products in the alliance as we are transforming digitally. So that's what we do.
So could you give us an example of why this work is important?
When you read a lot of things about NATO, you might have heard that we say that NATO's mission is to preserve peace and security for over 1 billion citizens. So that sounds really impressive, right? And this is really what drives my agency. So we play a pivotal role to ensure that NATO can operate effectively and securely in this very interconnected world. So practically, what does that mean? Well, we connect NATO. Very simple words. We ensure that our communication systems and the systems of all the allies can work together. So that means that nations can, during exercises or if they have to make political decisions or, you know, decide on the future of the alliance, have always a mean to talk to one another. One more thing about the agency and what we do is, of course, everyone has heard about cyber attacks and how it can be devastating on nations, on population and infrastructure. Well, the agency for NATO is on the front line protecting the alliance against cyber attack 24/7 and making sure that the alliance remains resilient. So this is very important for us, but we also do space capabilities. We also bring new technologies. We also study emerging and disruptive technologies like 5G, artificial intelligence. So really, this is what, as a tech arm of NATO, we provide and why it is so important in today's world.
Do you have a concrete example, maybe?
So what happened when we started the mission of NATO in Afghanistan, we, of course, had, I think, over 40 nations were involved, right? And the commander of the mission was, of course, an American general. And we had not thought about how to connect these people together with all the participants in this massive effort. So this general had 6 or 7 phones on his desk because every nation had a different network. So to contact one, he had to take that phone and then that computer with the other nations. So that became very quickly something that my agency fixed by creating a network that was the same for everyone. So I think that was one of the biggest CIS communication and information achievement that we did at the very beginning of the mission in Afghanistan.
You have been working for NATO for 21 years so far. How did your work change over those two decades?
It changed dramatically, and I'm glad because it feels that I've finished or continuing a journey that I'm very proud of. So I was able to join NATO just after college. So I was starting my master's degree and I was learning on the job. So the first 2 years of me working in NATO was very studious, learning a lot of things all at once. And then after about 4 years, I became a liaison officer. So what I did is I represented the agency to a committee that would give us the funding for the project that the agency was doing. So I was really excited because as a political scientist, I got to work with, you know, multiple nations, 20 plus nations every day. So it was very, very challenging, particularly as we were in Afghanistan. Decisions had to be made quick. Funding of projects had to be happening fast. So that was really a great first major achievement in my career. And then I moved to the United States in 2009. And there I worked with a military command. And suddenly I go from working with civilians or financial people, lawyers, and now it's sir, ma'am, very different way of working. And so that was a new adventure in my career. And that taught me a lot. And then maybe one thing in my career that changed me the most would be the time I spent in Afghanistan the summer of 2016. I volunteered to go because I really believe that anyone who works in a civilian position in NATO should understand the challenges that people face when they're in operations or missions. So I worked for about 2 months in what they call the Security Assistance Force Center that was basically managing the people who were training, monitoring, and assisting the new Afghan government and military entities. So that really taught me the value of what my agency was providing and how important it was to do it well, to do it on time, and to be responsive to those requirements. So very interesting evolution in my career brought me to places I didn't think I would be going, but incredibly fulfilling time so far.
So if you compare the 23-year-old visionee starting to work at NATO with the visionee today, what are your biggest learnings when it comes to building a career?
You know, I was wondering the other day if I could say that I've achieved my dream. Well, actually, I think I did, because I've wanted, since I was a very little girl, I wanted to work for NATO and I wanted to do something useful for NATO. So I think that back then, positions were difficult to get. People said, oh, you know, NATO is too difficult to access. Very many people apply. Not many get the job. Well, I'm glad that I persevered. I got the right education and I worked my way up where I am now. Again, not easy every day, but there are a few learnings. I've learned that working hard always pays off. I've also learned that what people think of me is really their problem, and that actively seeking opportunities, that taking risks here and there is really how you progress in life. So I volunteer to take additional duties. I mentioned my time in Afghanistan. So I try to challenge myself. And really to say more, yes, getting a job at NATO might be daunting or something that people think is only for former military people, but that's a misconception. Half of the people in NATO are civilians, just like you and me. So we are continuously looking for new talent across many areas, from human resources, finance, communication, engineering. So anything you can imagine. So we are looking for all kinds of profiles, not just the former military. So I would like to encourage everyone, especially women listening to this podcast, to explore those vacancies. Take a look at it, because there are many opportunities and maybe the next one would be yours.
So you were saying you wanted to work for NATO since you were a child. Can you tell us how everything started?
It started with my father. My father worked for NATO as a gendarme, so it's the state police, when they were doing security in NATO. And from a very young age, my father would take me to the headquarters and show me the delegations and tell me the story of why NATO was created and how important it was. I've learned to swim at the NATO Staff Center. I went to all the Christmas parties. So it felt like I grew up within NATO. So no surprise that I ended up studying political science, international relations, and that I looked at position there primarily. So I think my father would be proud today if he knew what I was doing and where I am in NATO.
And when did your father pass?
2016.
So he saw the beginnings of your career. He saw you moving to the US.
Yep.
And then unfortunately he passed.
He passed a little bit after I came back from Afghanistan. And unfortunately he was dealing with Parkinson and dementia. So he already were dealing with not being able to comprehend what was happening around him. But I remember that he cried when I moved to the United States because he knew that part of my dream was to live in America and continue my work with NATO. And so he's always somewhere there every time I'm in the headquarters because I knew how much this meant to him and he would have loved to be doing more for NATO than security. So I'm doing this for him partially too.
You once said in an interview, I have learned that when you can do the little things, you can do the big things. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. So I mentioned that I started working for NATO when I was 23 years old with no real experience. I began with a very entry level job and basic tasks, administrative work, making coffees, distributing mail, copying contracts. So I took every task on with enthusiasm because I wanted to learn and grow and I wanted to support everyone as best as I could. And today, what I see is I work with many peers that did not have to learn those foundational tasks and may not fully appreciate the challenges that the support staff faces every day. And because I've been there, I understand their frustrations and their challenges, and I always take this into account when I need help. And I believe that doing the little things has taught me the value of every contributions and has prepared me for the bigger tasks that I took on later on. So it's a perspective that has shaped my career and my approach to leadership as well. And I believe that you earn the respect of your colleagues by not forgetting that everyone's job is important.
You're also well known for supporting women, for calling yourself a feminist and for leading respectfully. At the risk of talking in stereotypes here, NATO seems like the opposite of all of that, a quite masculine workplace with other interests than gender equality and a military hierarchical structure. How do you fit in there?
I fit just fine. Well, at least I feel that I do now, because NATO has traditionally been seen as a very masculine organization. I mentioned that earlier. So, but significant strides have been made towards gender equality and becoming a more inclusive environment. And I've really witnessed this positive change in my 20 years in NATO. I won't lie. Years ago, I would often be the only woman in the room, the youngest, and sometimes I had the impression that my voice was not heard. As a woman, I felt like I needed to try harder than my male colleagues to get the positions that they had. So, and this is not exclusive to NATO, but unfortunately, it still happens everywhere. It's really good to see that things are changing, including at NATO. Because we now have policies and action plans and initiatives in place to progressively change the landscape of the organization towards something that's more balanced, an environment that's more inclusive for everyone. Are we there yet? No, we only have about 20% of women in my agency. But I know now that there are efforts being put in place that can help change that over time.
When we talk about the modern working world, we talk a lot about those topics, gender equality, diversity, equity, inclusion and accessibility. So how is NATO doing concerning those topics apart from having 20% women?
Well, it's taking the steps. And as I mentioned, this is something that is really progressive. I wish we could go faster, but knowing that they're recruiting now officers that do diversity, inclusion and equity in NATO, that's something that did not happen years ago. So, and if I remember well, the Secretary General said about diversity and inclusion that it's the heart of who we are at NATO and what we do. And so we have to draw on all the resources and all the experiences of this diverse crowd to make us stronger and better equipped to face the future. And I absolutely believe that this is encompassing the new spirit in NATO as we look at the action plan that was put in place in 2019 that has a roadmap to incorporate research and best practice to help get a more performing and diverse workforce. So things are happening. And NATO also has, by the way, a policy on women, peace and security so that we can also integrate gender perspective in all aspects of NATO, including operations. And I have seen in Afghanistan that this matters a lot. And the gender advisor has very influential in commands in operations and missions. So beyond women also, NATO has developed some initiatives to support the LGBTQ plus community with staff resource groups called Proud at NATO, and more will be done in the future. So my agency too, specifically, we finally have an amazing officer for diversity, equity and inclusion. Jonathan has been incredible in the last 3 years in really bringing forward the diversity perspective in all aspects of what the agency does. So again, there's reason to be optimistic and excited.
So what do you think stands in the way of women the most? Maybe from observing, but maybe also from your own experience?
Well, one of the main obstacles that I lived through, and I believe most women have experienced in many organizations, it's the persistence of stereotypes and unconscious bias that sometimes can limit opportunities for advancement. Another challenge can be also balancing work and family responsibilities, which, let's be honest, is often falls still on women. So there's need for greater support to ensure that women can pursue their careers without sacrificing their personal lives. And I think NATO there has realized that, because we have a great maternity leave policy, we great ways to be able to continue performing while becoming a parent or being a parent. Also, I think that women don't always have access to the same networks and opportunities that the men that we work with have. So that's why I think mentorship, allyship, and having role models is very important. And then one more thing I could say is that we do need to do more in NATO to promote careers available at NATO to many profiles, and maybe adjusting the narrative in our job descriptions. But also women tend to discard positions because they don't meet most or all the criteria for the position. So I also want to say we need to do better, but women also have to give themselves a chance and take the risk and consider what they can bring to NATO. So going over that fear that something is potentially not open to them.
So there is awareness about the issue of women. How did your own feminist awareness grow over the years?
I think I've always been a feminist. I never thought as a young girl that there were sports or activities that were not open to me. I mean, I play golf and I box, and these two sports are usually associated with men, right? So I think my personal experience and professional challenge that I mentioned before, and the influence of other inspiring individuals, have really shaped the feminist that I am today. I think I've worked hard on myself as well, and at the office, to overcome biases, disparities, or the barriers that I was facing, so that today I can help remove them completely for the young women that will follow me. So this is really what led me to be where I am now, my calling, if you want to. So the road is long, but there's recognition that something has to be done. So again, this is the priorities that we need to bring forward. And I think that the women in my organization should all consider what they can do to help pave the way for those who follow them.
What's your opinion on quota?
I have never liked quotas, because there's, I believe, no woman who wants to be selected because we need a number or because there needs to be a woman in this division. The worst thing I think we can do for women is to choose a woman and put a woman in a senior position because it's needed, but who will fail because she's not received the training, the mentoring, the support that would lead her to be successful. So I think also all women want to be selected based on merit and not on their gender. But the reality today is the workplace is still very much male dominated. The brotherhood of men, called in senior position, is still very real. And there's nothing like that for women out there that I know of. So until we have a critical mass of women and minorities in power, in positions of power and leadership, I believe that quotas may actually be an effective tool to promote gender equality, to address those systematic barriers. But this would have to be done jointly with the right tools and the right expertise, so that these women, talented women, can actually succeed at the top.
Yeah, the critical mass. I've heard about that. So I'm sure you are a role model for many women. Is there any particular role model that you have been inspired by over the years?
Many. I would say that generally I was very inspired by leaders such as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was a Supreme Court judge, or Madeleine Albright, the first female Secretary of State. I've been inspired by people like my piano teacher, who was a great influence as I was growing up. But more recently, one person that has been inspiring me tremendously is my golf teacher. My golf teacher is 76 years old, and she's American. And she decided in her late 30s that she was going to completely change her career because she wanted to teach golf. So she took that incredible change, plus decided to also come out as lesbian, all at a time in the 90s where women, it was incredibly hard to be open about all of this. And still today at 76 years old, she's inspiring hundreds of young women with their golf games, but also the confidence and self-respect. She's just not ready to retire, and she's an incredible influence in my life every day. I basically want to be her when I grow up.
I guess that's the challenge, finding your own way of living somehow.
But doing it, taking the risk of doing it. And that to me is incredibly inspiring.
Which leadership style did you develop over the years?
Well, I think I'm a very much a people person. And so my style of leadership was always going to be focused on the well-being and the success of my team. I think I'm a very empathetic person. At least that's what's said about me. And I care really that everyone that I'm responsible for feels integrated, heard, and challenged in a positive way. I also believe in doing so by using kindness and by welcoming vulnerability when needed. Sometimes men's style of leadership, it's about showing strength, resolve, a little self-confidence, assertiveness. Well, it may work for some, but I don't think that's the only way to lead. We've recently been offered at the agency a leadership training called Catalytic Leadership to address the challenges that we were dealing in the office. And one thing that I really liked about that training was this concept of putting yourself as a leader on the edge of the circle that is your team, rather than being at the center, because it allows you to see everyone, hear everyone, take everyone's viewpoints while still remaining in the driver's seat, right? So kind, respectful leadership, allowing vulnerability, that's what suits me, I think, at this point of my career.
But kind and empathetic leadership in a military organization, what do you tell those who don't believe you?
Try it if you dare. I really believe that empathy is the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes, right? So it's about taking time to see their points, their feelings, and the needs of those around you before you make any decision. So I'll ask, why would you not be an empathetic and kind leader? Particularly in the military domains where operations and missions require the full commitment of your team to ensure everyone's safety. And if you've not created meaningful connections with your troops or your team, you could put yourself and your other in danger in times of crisis. So to me, having empathy is important, but it's not the only key to success, right? So it's great to say you have empathy, but you also have to put your money where your mouth is and take the necessary actions to meet those needs and those feelings that you've captured. So I can give you an example. For example, during COVID, everyone started working from home. And after we all came back to the office, we have realized that it actually worked well and that productivity was not going down because people were working from home. And we also saw that it improved the staff morale and flexibility in how people work. So I've always supported this now that COVID is behind us, hopefully. And because I trust my team implicitly, and I know that it will bring more benefit to the group than forcing everyone to be at the office every day. And being empathetic is to really consider the needs and what works and what makes your team feel good. So, and this has definitely made our team stronger and more connected and happier, really.
Could you imagine a pacifist working at NATO?
Well, if you're referring to the core definition of a pacifist, one might say that no, because pacifists in the literal sense of the term would not work for NATO because we're using political but also military efforts to resolve disputes. But I think to me that pacifists advocate for peace, right? Well, that's what NATO advocates for too. Conflict prevention, democratic values, peace, freedom, and stability. So yes, you can be a pacifist and work for NATO.
Would you call yourself one?
Yes, actually I would. To the extent that I have dedicated my career to be part of an organization that has guaranteed freedom and safety for the Euro-Atlantic area for 75 years. I really do believe in the values and the missions of the Alliance. And 21 years into the job, I continue to believe that this organization really is essential to guarantee peace and security.
So if a woman wanted to work for NATO, where does she start? What options would she have?
NATO is committed to derive its strength from talented and diverse people, so a really diverse workforce. So now the Alliance has put in place strategies to attract, to develop and retain a mix of people with different skills, backgrounds, experience and cultures. So access to the broadest possible range of talent is essential to generate the innovative ideas and capabilities that we need in NATO. And a woman will have as many options as men. And I really want to stress that. So the only restrictions that they would have is that you have to come from one of the 32 nations, member nations. That is the only restriction they will face. So any woman interested in contributing to the Alliance, regardless of her educational background, skills, should consider applying to one of our positions. Again, looking into our NATO website. So people often think that NATO is only for military planners and engineers. And I want to stress again, that is not the case. We are looking for all kinds of profiles. And we really need the interest of young, talented women to turn to NATO and see if they could also contribute to the Alliance mission and vision.
So with your experience of powering through this male-dominated work environment for more than 20 years, what is the best career or maybe life advice you got? And which one would you like to pass on to other women, no matter if they work at NATO or elsewhere?
I think that plenty of things come to mind, but I think I will pick three that I strongly believe in. I think that first, no matter what the job is, always be prepared and work hard. Second, I think one should look at who leads the team that you're applying to more than the job itself. I think that being part of a group that is led by someone who values you, your ideas, your enthusiasm is more important to me than the functions that I would have had in that team. And then lastly, and it may seem very empathetic and kind, but yes, be kind, kind to yourself and to others always.
Virginie, thanks so much for sharing your story and being here.
You are very welcome and thank you for inviting me. This was a great chat.
We hope you enjoyed the interview. If you want to find out more about her career, visit us online at her-career.com and join our next Her Career Expo in Munich. Subscribe to our newsletter with exciting interviews, event tips, mentors, and much more at her-career.com/newsletter. We look forward to you becoming part of our network.